He's a certified strength and conditioning coach. He also plays rugby on his spare time, so if you have any questions about that, number one guy to go to, as far as I know, is the best rugby player in Houston. Don't quote me on that.
Yeah.
But without further ado, Chris Juno.
Hey, thanks. Bob, thanks for having me again. I think this is like third or fourth year that I've done this, but obviously the first at this facility, this is pretty wild. Looking out behind everybody and looking at the stadium back here, I think this is a college from what I can tell. So anyway, so we're going to talk about strategies to reduce overuse injuries in endurance athletes. And so there's there was a couple of ideas and thoughts about how I was going to go about doing this, right? There's the obvious, like let's talk about running and endurance athlete injuries, like shoulder injuries in swimmers. We could talk about Achilles tendonitis or overuse injuries in runners in their calf or things like that. And what I decided to do instead is maybe provide you a little bit more of a novel approach to load management, to stress and endurance athletes, specifically into kind of this whole paradigm that we're talking about overuse injuries. And so what you're going to find is a lot of stuff from Tim Gavitt. And if anybody's familiar, show of hands, Tim Gavitt, anybody? A few? Yeah, so Tim Gavitt is a researcher that's gotten really popular with attempting to quantify load, right, and what that means, and why does that matter? And so essentially what I'm going to provide you is not another lecture with, well, endurance athletes run too much, swimmers swim too much, cyclists get on the bike too much, they should stop and do less of that. We need to provide better ideas from a healthcare standpoint, because I think we're failing, big medicine I think is just failing telling people no. Athletes over the last probably 10 to 15 years have gotten away with going to doctors with PTs and ATs because they know we're going to tell them to stop. And that's got to stop. We have to be more accommodative to that and internalize some of this education that we're attempting to ultimately provide to them. So that's what this talk is ultimately going to be about. And so we're going to start off with what's an overuse injury. And there's some cool infographics in here. If you get my presentation, like Brett, I borrowed a lot of these images. They are not mine, so they're all cited at the bottom. But if you print this slideshow out, it really will help because some of this stuff is very useful. I use this in the clinic literally every day. All right, so the first thing first is what's an overuse injury? Obviously, it is your brain writing checks your body can't cash. Right, quite simply, if you look up here, you're going to recognize all these things. You can't really see my laser pointer, but your training is outweighing the capacity of your tissue. And you can literally insert anything you want on this side of the seesaw, right? This could be heat illness. This could be Achilles tendonitis. This could be stress fractures. This could be overuse injuries in throwers. This could be lateral epicondylalgia in a tennis player. This could be any of those things. Essentially, the tissue does not have the capacity to tolerate the exercise or the load you're putting on. Okay? I literally have this slide printed out, and I show it to most athletes that come in when they say, I don't understand why I'm not getting better. I've been resting. And I'll say, well, great. How long have you been resting? Well, I took the whole day off yesterday. Right? That's not the same thing as you've been dealing with this for 5 months and you took one day off and why am I not magically better? No, you are not excused from the normal adaptive healing response of everybody else just because you're able to throw a football farther than I can. I promise you. That's just not how this works. All right, so what we're going to talk about is why do these things happen, right? They are micro trauma, right? Repetitive micro trauma. Most injuries. Now, this is excusing, obviously, somebody that steps in a pothole while they're running through the, you know, a trail run and breaks something or roll their ankle aggressively. This is all of those more popular injuries, right, that we see on a day-to-day basis. Stress injuries, low back pain, all this stuff. What most people don't talk about is the less common injuries down here at the bottom. So how many of us have had an athlete, somebody come in and say, like, I just feel run down, right? Like, my joints just ache. I coached weightlifting for a long time. It's amazing, guys and girls come in, like, I just, my knees just hurt. Like, they just sore all the time. And so these are the things we don't talk about, right? Apathy towards training. This is some of that really dangerous, right, down here at the bottom, fatigue, frequent illness. Overtraining syndromes, decline in training capacity or performance, I think that's just as dangerous as the people that are having overuse injuries themselves, right? Palpable tissue damage. So what can we do about that? And why ultimately are we having this problem? This is an awesome schematic. Please, if you take anything away, take this slide, print it out, put it on your desk. Insert, again, like anything else we've been talking about, insert anything at the top. How throwing injuries happen, how overuse injuries happen, right? So again, let's start up here at the top. You start running with a load capacity. And let's say we're talking about Achilles tendonitis. Your Achilles has a finite limit. It can take, let's call it 100 strides before it's gonna fail. Okay, and let's not talk about a frank rupture. Let's just talk about the tissue is going to become pissed off and irritated, and you're going to get some kind of irritation and tendonitis. Okay, the load at the bottom is applied, and let's call that a run. All right, so if you run long enough, you will inevitably supersede the capacity of your Achilles tendon, right? And then you end up with injury here at the top. Now, that's quite simple. We're like, yeah, well, that makes sense. We see this all the time. What we aren't taking into account, though, is all of these other factors and variables that go into it. Things like, what's your training day like before? How much rest did you get? How much have you been eating? How much have you been drinking? Good or bad drinking, I guess. Right, what about genetically? How old are you? What's your past injury, right? Injury history. Also, well, what about structure? How much have you been training? Is this a higher run for you? Are you running on uneven surfaces down here at the bottom? Maybe you changed that today, you decided to go for a 10-mile run. Yesterday, you ran 3, right? What about change in magnitude, like we just talked about? Maybe you decided to sprint the first mile and then pace out the rest of it, right? And load distribution. Maybe you bought a new pair of shoes, right? Some new flat shoes, the all fancy low drop, low mill flats that are all popular, and you haven't been using them, but you decided to run in these new shoes for the same distance that you've been training in. Right, all of that goes into how this load paradigm is shaped. And what ends up happening is you supersede what you are capable of doing, and then things fall off, right? You fall off the wagon, things go south, and then you're trying to piecemeal together, like, what's happening, right? These shoes are supposed to make me faster, and now they're just making me hurt, okay? And so ultimately, what we're trying to do is build basically an outline for a person, for an athlete, for our individuals that are coming in so that they understand why we're spending time talking about this instead of rolling out their calf or instead of doing soft tissue mobilizations of their tissue itself. Why I'm spending 45 minutes discussing this stuff and not getting them on the table doing PT, right? This is PT. This is rehab. This is getting them to, again, internalize why they need to understand what load is, okay? And so what I use is the cup analogy. Is anybody familiar with the cup analogy about how to manage load? Maybe, no? So just about every athlete comes in, I say, listen, we'll stay with the Achilles side. Your Achilles is a cup. It has a finite limit. It can only hold so much water. It's only so big. When you've put more water than the cup can handle, it gets hurt, right? Simple stuff. Now, what goes into the cup? All right, so everything goes into the cup. That includes walking, that includes how many times you sit and stand, that includes you running to your car, that includes the workout you did in the morning and the workout you did last night. It also includes the practice you're gonna go to later today, and it also includes the fact that you haven't sat down because you've been running around at, let's call it recess, or let's say that you had to run some errands at lunch. All of that goes into the cup, okay? It has a finite limit. So what can we do about it? So we can do one of three things. We can pour some out of the cup, right? And that goes as far as saying rest. This is our recovery tactics. Things, like I said, that's up here. Apparel and training aids, braces, different kind of shoe wear, maybe a medial arch support if they're having medial shin splints, something to that effect, right? Sleep, nutrition, rest, modalities, ice, foam rolling, things like that. Okay, that is removing some out of our cup, which is a good thing, right? Keeps us closer or further away from the top. All right. Other thing is get a bigger cup, right? That seems obvious as well. Well, how do I make the cup bigger? You've got to train to get bigger. This is where most endurance athletes fail, most that I see anyway, is they don't spend enough time cross-training. So we end up getting athletes that are running, 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 swimming, 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 cycling, cycling, cycling. There's not enough devoted time to strength training. The way that tissue adapts over time is to make it more competent to load. The way you can do that is to have bigger calves, right? There's great research that supports running injuries. If a runner spends more time on calf strength, there is a lower likelihood that they'll end up with any kind of rupture and or Achilles or plantar fascial type pain. All right, so that's getting a bigger cut. That seems obvious as well. Improve their efficiency, great. What we're gonna talk about is pour less in it. That's the focus of this talk, okay? And what that means is, how do we adapt load, volume, frequency, and their type of training? Because we're ultimately asking them, how can we change your day-to-day to fit the size of your cup, not the other way around, all right? And I'll basically tell them that as soon as you supersede that, your Achilles is gonna hurt. Okay, so the first thing is, how do we quantify that? And this is what I was alluding to earlier with Tim Gavitt's stuff. So we need to figure out how to do that. And this is really hard because there's about 50 different variables all going into this, this cocktail saying what is ultimately providing the fluid that's going into the cup in a day. And so training loads, agenda, travel, psychological loads, all this is accounting for the cup. And so what people have started to do, if you've heard about this, is down here at the bottom. So RPE, we're all familiar with RPE, right? Rating of perceived exertion. This is basically asking, how hard was that for you? And they give you a number. It can be out of 10. It can also be out of 20, or 20, depending on what scale you want to use. I don't care, as long as it's the same scale every time. So that run for me, coach, was an 8 out of 10. Wow, okay, that's 80%. You sure? Yeah, that was pretty tough. Okay, perfect. Right. The other thing you can use that were not as readily available, catapult, omega wave, these are things that are checking your resting heart rate. This is checking readiness in athletes. They're way more expensive and arguably unnecessary. All right. They're fancy to have. They're great. I've worked with a lot of pro teams on how well they use this. Sometimes the information is hard to use because it is impacted by a lot of different variables that you can't control for. So personally, I use RPE, and I'll get to how I use this here in a second. And the last thing that I use is a health questionnaire, right? And this could be readiness, right? How tired are you? How well did you sleep? How many hours did you sleep? How mentally demanding was your day yesterday? Well, I had 4 finals. My mom was yelling at me to get some stuff done at the house. I had to cut the grass when I got home. My father wasn't happy. Things like that. All of that dumps into this health questionnaire. All right, so we get a better picture of, all right, the training load that you're under. Can you please give me an RPE? How hard was the last 5 days of practice? Well, it was 2 days, and it absolutely destroyed me. All right, that in conjunction with, right, some of the other at-home issues, things like that, and that gives us kind of a cumulative load, if you will. All right, and so what I basically tell most of my athletes is what we're going to try to do, and I'm telling you, 45 minutes on education about what this looks like. So how do we manage all of those variables? Well, rest and offloading are the easiest. That's not always applicable though, right? We can't stop athletes when they're training, especially when it's team-based training and they, right, it's fall football. You gotta be out there, you gotta be getting after it. Right, to Brett's point, wrestling, things like that, practices are long, you have to slowly adapt to that. Undulating, right? Is anybody familiar with this term? Undulation is the act of providing a peak and valley system to any dosed training exercise, right? Nothing is linear. Nobody starts running and gets faster and stronger and runs further the entire life. It's impossible. You will break down. So essentially, we provide a stimulus, we deload it, allow the tissue to recover, then you provide a hyperstimulus, right? And so you basically just undulate your way higher where the tissue is adapting to a higher and higher level. Most athletes, especially newer athletes, feel like they can just go forever, right? They're hitting PRs all the time. Great, I'm getting faster. Just gonna keep going. You've gotta educate them. You cannot keep doing that. It won't make it. Cross training, again, we talked about this earlier with runners specifically. Calf strengthening is wildly important. Swimmers, you could look at cuff strengthening. There's a lot of different variables. We won't get bogged down with that. But education and discussion is by far the biggest thing that I spend time on. All right? And I tell them, I use this quote all the time. It's not necessarily the exercise that you're doing, as in like, doc, just give me some exercises to make my shoulder stronger. I know it'll feel better. I agree, but it's not the exercise you're doing. It's the stuff you're not doing. It's the adequate amount of downtime that you're not taking advantage of, because, right, if a little's good, a lot's better forever and ever and ever, right? And that's never the case, but, you know, we still get bogged down in that. And so this is what I use. This, again, obviously is from Tim Gavitt's stuff. Basically uses RPE and perceived readiness with a questionnaire, and goes ahead and gives you this kind of arbitrary units. Okay, so RPE times minutes. So we went for a 5 mile run today, and I asked my runner after, how hard was that? And they say, well, it was pretty tough. It was about a 7. So we ran at a fast pace. They ran a 7 out of 10. That's 70%, 70 times. And let's say it took them X number of minutes. Let's say it took them, for the sake of argument, 30 minutes. 210 is my arbitrary number, right? That means nothing to anybody except you and your athlete. Because what you want to know is just add that up over time, and you can start to develop a profile for that athlete. We know that you get really tired when we're going over 2,000 arbitrary units in a week. And that may let you dose, well, you're already at 1,500 by Friday. Maybe Saturday needs to be a lighter day for you because you're already approaching your 2,000 limit, because we know once at 2,000, you really feel like your numbers start tapering and getting worse. Does that make sense, everybody? Okay, so what I typically go from there is talk about the Goldilocks principle. Everybody's heard the three little bears, right? Goldilocks. Porridge is too hot, too cold, just right. What we're looking for, right, is obviously what happens when you get too hot, right? So I usually tell athletes, remember, it's just like the three little bears, right? We want the dose to be just right. And how do we get there? We get there with all that stuff we just talked about. Right, education on offloading, on rest and recovery, on basically quantifying their load day to day to day, and so that they're being honest about it. Because once it gets too far, and your ratio, right, basically your acute to chronic workload, when your workload supersedes your tissue, you get hurt. All right, quite simply, most athletes understand that. All right, and so what I tell them is we're going to use the 10% rule because that's the easiest and most generally accepted rule when it comes to loading tissue. If you're loading it, because if you read the top, it says highest training workloads alone do not cause sports injuries. That's a fact. There are plenty of people that are running crazy amounts of mileage that don't get hurt. What does change, and you can see this from the scales at the bottom, when you change how much load happens per week, that's a percentage of change per week, the larger the percentage change, the higher risk of injury. So if you run 1 mile on week one and you decide to run 5 miles on week two, you got a higher risk of injury, right? And this goes the same for heat illness and everything else, right? If you show up and your athletes aren't conditioned for what could be 106 degrees outside, you have a higher risk, right? If you slowly bring them along, when we spend an hour outside and then an hour and a half and then 2 hours over a period of time, there's a lower risk of injury, all right? So 10% is what's generally accepted. And so that's what I use with this scale, right? This scale, I'll use 10%. So we're going to go up by 10% each week to lift their threshold, okay? And then I get this question all the time, yeah, but I can't. Like, my sport is different. No sport is different. They're all the same, I can guarantee you. You know what else is the same? Beer and hangovers. It literally works in anything you want to apply this to. I can guarantee you. This is a study that looked at hangovers and beer consumption. And guess what? When there's an acute spike in load, look at the risk of hangover. It's the same thing no matter what you want to apply this to. All right? The other thing is what happens when it's too low. Okay, so can the same scale be used the opposite direction? And the answer is absolutely correct. So if you look over here, that scale is trending upward towards a higher risk. So there is some in between. Right? The porridge is too cold, you're deconditioned, you're undertrained. The porridge is too hot, you're overtrained, higher risk. So there's both risk on both sides. Finding this is incredibly difficult. Simple as that. So I'm trying to give you some ideas about what to do with that. This is an example of actually training volume, and this is what I use based on, again, RPE and readiness. These colors are based on RPE. Okay, so basically what we've done, and again, this is not my graph, but this is what I use. I will break exercises and or prescribed kind of exercise intervals and days into colors, right? So on here, you can see at the bottom, right, there's basically light moderate, and high is how they basically stratify these colors, right? Red being high, blue being obviously rest, yellow are so would be in the middle, and then green would be the lightest. Okay? And they basically stratify each exercise day according to that. So a 2.5 mile or 2.5 hour light jog, classical roller skiing, varied terrain. Now, how do they know this stuff? Trial and error, right? You have them do it, you decide how they did. That was really hard, Chris. Okay, you log that in your book. When I need a red or a hard exercise, when they're recovered and we want to push, here's where we go. That was actually pretty easy. I feel pretty recovered, that wasn't bad. Great, put that in your file folder and say, like, when I need a lighter exercise, here's where I go. If I want a higher tackling drill, this is where I go. If I want a lower tackling drill, because it's a billion degrees outside, maybe this is where I go, right? This is the kind of stuff that really makes or breaks the durability of your athletes. All right, so it seems simple, right? You just measure it out, you put it on a scale, you know right where it is, and you go on about your business, but there's no way it's that easy, right? It's never that easy. And so what I put together is a little case, and this is a personal case of mine. This was about 6 months ago, 8 months ago, I guess. And so this is a 14-year-old gymnast, and the referring physician called me ahead of time and said, Chris, I need you to do me a favor. I need you to work some magic here. I've been dealing with this young girl for a while. She's not getting better, and I don't know what to do. The reason is we've done some scans. She had an ankle sprain, I think about 6 months ago when I saw her. Pretty bad ankle sprain, no doubt about it. A lot of effusion, a lot of edema. Did some images. Yeah, she's got a little swelling in her tarsal sinus. She's probably ATFL, right, her lateral ankle ligament. She's deficient there, but she shouldn't be this painful. She's still painful walking. She's still painful going to school. She can't do basically anything on her feet. No tumbling, no balance beam. She can do upper body stuff, and that's about it. She's seen two PTs already. They've treated her, really didn't do a whole lot to get better, and she's still struggling, right? So the parents come in, I have her talk for a bit, and she's telling me about all the exercise that she's been doing while I'm walking around school, and then I kind of do some tumbling when I can, and when I can't, I just kind of lay off of it. I'll spend time on the bars, but it kind of comes and goes. I'll have a good day, then a bad day, and it just depends on this, that, and the other. It's certainly always painful with walking and tumbling, and school is pretty brutal by the end of the day. I have her stand up, and she's like, it hurts to stand on one foot, right? She's got a little bit of swelling around her ankle. She can't do a calf raise, right? She can walk around. She can do 30 on her uninvolved. She can't do one on her involved because it's painful. Flexibility is fine, and I put her open kinetic chain right on the table with her ankle off the edge. She can resist me. She can do whatever she wants. There is zero pain. I can move her ankle around, back, forth, up, down. No problems. Feels great. So this is clearly not a muscular problem. It's just a volume problem, right? And so I have this conversation with her. Talk me through your week. Well, I go here and here and here, and I'm here, and then I'm going to the, you know, gymnastics after that. And I talk to her mom, who's very open to whatever. She's like, Chris, you know, Dr. So-and-so sent us to you. I'll listen to whatever you say. I'm like, perfect. This is great. So the first thing I say is crutches. And her daughter looks at me like, you are out of your mind. There's no chance you're putting me on crutches. So I talked to them and mom for about 30 minutes. By the end of the day, she's like, all right, fine. I'll be on crutches for the day. She texts me the next day, like, it actually feels better. I'm like, I know, you hate that, don't you? Because now you know what I'm going to tell you. You're going to be on crutches for another day. And so essentially what we did is she had a competition coming up in a week and a half. I said, listen, I want you on crutches every day. You can go to tumbling and gymnastics that night, and you can walk around the mat, assuming you don't have any pain doing so. Within a week, she was walking at school totally pain-free. She couldn't tumble yet, she couldn't run, and she could do 5 calf raises by, I think, 5 days later. And she's like, I don't understand why it's getting so much better when I've been trying everything else. It's like, well, effectively, it's a volume problem, and your rehab has been adding volume, right? She goes to PT, and they're like, well, your ankle's weak, so let's do some calf raises. That's not what she needed. She needed to be off of it, not adding more to the cup. Does that make sense? And so essentially what we created was a program where she slowly added things back in, but we got to start from the bottom. I told her goal number one was to walk at school for an entire week without any pain afterwards. It took about a week and a half to 2 weeks. She's like, I can walk around stairs, no problem, up and down. And then we started adding incremental gymnastics at the end of the day. And that was our program. within about 6 months total. That was with her competing while I was frantically trying to prevent her from doing so, but we all know how that goes. So I was kind of playing up and down. We'd have some good weeks where she'd rest. And then we had a week or two off, she was on crutches. And then we'd recover, and then she'd kind of slowly dose it back up. And then again, within about 6 months, she was totally fine. So again, in kind of adding this all into a nice summary slide, because I want to give time for some questions as well, but essentially what we're, where the problem with most of these endurance athletes, again, it's what they're not doing. Sometimes we've got to be the bad guys and say, listen, if you want this to get better, you have got to give it a chance to get better. Me adding things in is not helping you. You need to be stronger. There's no doubt she could have used the ability to do a calf raise with some calf strengthening, but me doing so did not and was not going to help the loading dilemma and paradigm she was already under. And so again, you can use this slide to add those things in, right? External workload, internal workload, readiness, perceptual well-being, all of those things are going to feed into where and how much you can load or regress them. And this is the benefit of being with your athletes all the time. You know, like, what's been up with you, right? You've been kind of down lately. Is something going on? I wouldn't know that as a strength coach or a PT unless I know the athlete as well as athletic trainers that are spending time or coaches that are spending time. That's all I got, team. Any questions? And so, again, right, this is obviously take-home heat illness, the shin splints, and certainly for beer drinking as well. So be safe out there. Yeah, got a question.
On the RPE, you were saying, like, let's say we did a 5 mile run, and how hard was that? It was a 7, okay. Can't even, like, environmental factors change that? So, like, you do a run at 5 a.m. when it's nice and cool outside and dark, and that was a 5.
Yep.
Then we go do that same run at 3 p.m. when it's really, really hot, that was a 9.
Yep. So it's just basically in your little logbook, you're writing down, like, we ran this in the middle of the afternoon, and it was X degrees. It is a bit microscopic, right? It's a bit granular,
right.
and it can be overwhelming. And you don't have to be so, again, so objective about it. But,
as long as you keep your criteria and your numbering system the same.
Exactly right.
It'll work. I got you.
That's the problem, right, is you got to have somebody. And we need to have strength coaches or trainers that really have the power to control that. Like, coach, talking with a few of the guys, they're really run down.
Right.
They had a doubleheader yesterday or – it's been a long week for them. Yeah. It's finals week.
This is a real simple system. That's what I want to kind of explain to the coaches so that they can maybe even quantify it themselves and do the same thing. Work on building their athletes up gradually and understanding, okay, how far can I take it? Wait, maybe I'm taking it too far. Maybe I can take it further. Whatever.
When I was working with Louisville, their coaches had a big book that they had created over time. We'll just call it With the Rowers, for instance. And they would look through a book, and he had a grouping of red exercises they would pull from when they needed something. Like, they're fresh, they're coming off of a break, they feel good, let's get them.
Yeah.
And you could pull from that stuff. Yeah.
While he's getting set up, I'm asking you one more question. What are some things we can tell coaches or even parents to these athletes who are experiencing these overuse and we decide to put them in the boot or in crutches? But, of course, a coach or a parent might say, hey, I mean, my child isn't fractured. They don't have these really serious injuries. Why are we taking these backward steps that seem extreme?
Yeah, well, that's the problem, right, is you have to let them understand. And that's why internalizing a lot of this education helps, so that they understand that the reason we're doing this go backwards to go forwards. Obviously, what you're doing is not working, right? And most people are well equipped to go forward, right? Always more, always add something. And so some cases it's like, hey, you've tried your side, let's try my way, and let's see how it does and responds. I think your son or daughter is overloading and overworking themselves. Sometimes you just need some recovery. And again, if you can provide them some ancillary exercise, like, listen, little Johnny's going to be on the sidelines, but I got battle ropes and I've got plates over there. Little Johnny's going to have a real hard day today, but we're not going to put any stress on his ankle or his leg or something like that, right? I know there's not a direct translation over riding a bike and running, but at least we can maintain some cardiovascular integrity while not sacrificing the fact that now we can't run on Sunday. Because the fact of the matter is, it doesn't matter what I do. If they can't run or participate, then it's a waste of time anyway. Right.
Any other questions for him?